87.9 Pyrocat FM in San Francisco. We are streaming out live at pyrocatradio.com. And we're going to get started really soon with the first periodic apocalypse lecture, swine flu, influenza, and all that ridiculous garbage. So we've got Dr. Kirsten Sanford from This Week in Science. We have Brian Mallow, the science comedian, standing by. We do this thing at Pyrocat Radio where we start off with some news headlines. So that's what we're going to do first. So I'm just letting you know what's going on. We're just about to get started. And actually, why don't we kick it off with a PSA from our intrepid PSA reporter, John Paul. John Paul, are you on?
Yes, thank you, DJ Prefix.
Prefect, don't panic. DJ Prefect.
Don't panic, never do. Engineers Without Borders partners with developing communities worldwide to improve their quality of life. Their activities range from construction of sustainable engineering projects for developing communities to empowering these communities by enhancing local, technical, managerial, and entrepreneurial skills. For more info, you can always go to ewb-sfp.org. That's right, org. This PSA brought to you from your friends at Pyrocat Radio. Also, PyrocatRadio.com is an excellent resource for the goings-ons of SF Bay Area. Besides being able to listen to our station fuzz-free online, we also have a highly comprehensive and frequently updated calendar. DJs' schedules, rants, application forms, and current events information. This PSA also brought to you from your friends at Pyrocat Radio. 87.9.
That is all you needed to do. And you did it brilliantly. You have a great radio voice, actually. So that's great. And we are going to kick off with a couple of news headlines from our fearless intern, Meg. Have you got something good?
Yeah.
You need a mic.
All right, for the science news today, we have the good, the bad, and the not so good. We're going to start with the good. There's good news for a change. Barrier beaches score high on water quality. It's safe to go into the water, according to a new health report card for California's beaches, the vast coastal playground for millions who dig in the sand, swim, surf, and dive. Most beaches in San Francisco Bay region won excellent marks based on the risk of adverse health effects to beachgoers from bacteria pollution levels in the surf zone. So send somewhere on the beaches of the Bay Area. They're okay.
Okay.
And then we have some mixed news from the tireless Mars rover.
Let's hear about the Mars robots.
The latest news from NASA's robot explorers on Mars is both good and not so good. Opportunity, one of the pair that landed there more than 5 years ago, has discovered ancient wind-blown sand dunes and signs of water amid the sedimentary rocks inside the rim of an ancient Martian crater. And it's sending back pictures showing hundreds of tiny purple pebbles formed long ago from rising water levels on the sloping ground outside the crater. That's a really long sentence. But Spirit, Opportunity's twin on the opposite side of the planet, is in trouble.
Ooh, bum bum bum.
It's stuck hub deep and up to its belly in a patch of soft sand. Its five working wheels were spinning fruitlessly in the sand until mission control engineers back home stopped them. And now the teams are puzzling how to get the stranded robot moving again.
Aw, is this kind of like the E.T. Atari game where, like, you can't actually win because E.T. falls into a pit and you have to, like grab, like, do that weird, like, head-stretching maneuver that doesn't get him out of a pit?
You have to renew him. It's sort of like a Mario Brothers when you would get stuck in a little...
Yeah, that's what happened to the Mars robots.
Exactly.
All right.
All right, we've got one more. You ready for one more?
Yeah, California condors shooting.
There's some shootings. There's drive-by shootings in the
nature
world.
Why would you?
Not only for the urbanites.
Yeah, why would you shoot condors? I don't get it.
Let's find out. The recent shootings of two endangered California condors have prompted a statewide manhunt for the shotgun-wielding poachers. The radio-collared vultures were shot somewhere between Big Sur and the Pinnacles National Monument, where they are known to forage, said Adam Keats, director of Urban Wildlands Program for the San Francisco Office of the Center for Biological Diversity. The condors were found this spring, alive but wounded. One of them, which was among the first of the birds to be released in the region as part of a restoration program, later died of unrelated lead poisoning.
Hmm.
Poor things. It's stacked against them.
People are outraged.
Lead poisoning, which is unrelated to the lead bullet that was in it? Doesn't seem very unrelated.
Right. It got lead poisoning, and then they shot it, right. And then it died of lead poisoning.
So if you need some money, if you're strapped for cash, the Center for Biological Diversity began distributing posters Thursday, offering a $40,000 reward for tips that lead to the shooters.
Wow.
So
the largest reward ever offered at this in
if
the...
If you're not winning at the lottery, go ahead and look for those condor shooters.
Right. Yeah, go find the people that poached the condors. All right. Well, cool. Well, let's cut back to some music. And when we come back, we will start the show. We'll start talking about influenza, H1N1, where it comes from and where is it going on Pirate Radio, 87.9 FM. By the way, if you want to call in during the show, it's 415-341-1199. And if you want to come down, we are doing this live. So come down to 21st in Florida. We've got a couple people on hand that can make you some mighty fine lattes, including a bacon latte, maple bacon latte, which you might want to grab in, you know, in honor of the swine flu bacon's revenge event that we're having down here at Pirate Cat Radio Cafe. So cut to some music and we'll be back in a minute.
Hey, this is Ava from the White Barons, and you are listening to Pirate Cat Radio in San Francisco.
And we're back on Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM in San Francisco, 87.9 FM in Los Angeles, 104.8 in Berlin, piratecatradio.com, streaming all over the web, all over those interwebs. And if you want to catch me on Twitter and ask me some questions during our first periodic apocalypse event, Swine Flu Bacon's Revenge, I want you to add me as NTHMOST, Nthmost, and send me a message. So we're going to get started. We have Dr. Kirsten Sanford of This Week in Science here to drop this, some of the science, and then the other half of the science, which may be more funny. we'll be coming from Brian Mallow, the science comedian. Both of them are local San Francisco residents, which is totally great. But I kind of want to kick off the conversation. Well, let me hear some introductions, actually. I just hang on a second.
Here is Kirsten Sanford. She's the brains, the PhD.
Yeah.
And over here is Brian Mallow, and he is the funny one of the two of us. So... Between the two of us, you know, it might be interesting.
I'm going to try to outsmart her, and she's going to try to be funnier than me.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Awesome.
We'll work on it.
Cool. Well, all right. So I'm DJ Prefect, and I'm sitting in the booth, so you can't see me. If you guys are watching on Ustream, we have like a dozen Ustream viewers. That's pretty cool.
Hi, Ooh. Ustream.
Hey.
Hello, everyone out there.
This is something new that we're doing at Pirate Cat Radio Cafe. We're trying to inject a little bit of science into culture and everything. So... Okay, so here's the topic that we're looking at. It's swine flu. It's H1N1 influenza. Where does it come from, and why do we care? I mean, this is an influenza virus for one thing. Is it actually killing people? Is it more virulent? Is it more deadly? And everything that they say,
not more deadly? No.
No.
So, it sounds deadly. Pandemic. Epidemic. God, we're all gonna die, you know? And the reality is that the media just likes to sell newspapers and magazines and airtime and advertisements, and they make things sound really, really, really terrible, when in fact, this particular swine flu is not nearly as deadly as the avian flu. However, it is more transmissible between people than the avian flu. So that's why you have the back and forth. The really deadly one doesn't spread between people very well, and so it's not gonna turn into that terrible pandemic.
Some people have died from this, though, right?
Oh, yeah, but people die from the flu all the time.
Yeah.
Not to say that that's, you know, an okay thing, but
I think it's something
common.
It's something like 20,000 people or something like that per year. 30,000?
36,000 people a year die in the United States from the flu.
Wow.
A year.
Yeah.
And that's not the bird or pig or horse or cow flu. Remember the good old days when it was just human flu that we had to worry about?
Yeah, well, the flu's it's interesting. There's all, I looked into it, there are all these different flu strains. You have type A, you have type B, you have type C. It's type A that we have to worry about. It's the one that is really virulent in humans, and it's the one that mutates really fast. So it's constantly giving our immune system a run for its money. And so every year, there's like, the southern hemisphere is like, hey, we're going to mix it up again. And then it spreads to the northern hemisphere, and we go, we have to deal with it. And our bodies fight it off. And then, you know, from us, then the southern hemisphere is like, oh, we'll figure out what we have to do. And then it just kind of switches back and forth every year. And there's always something new. Always something new, and sometimes more deadly than others.
Right. But at the same time, we actually have a history of certain strains of flu. Like the swine flu is actually the H1N1, just reborn from Spanish flu, right?
Yeah, it's and I believe that it's probably the same mixing vessel. So being the swine, the pig is a really fantastic animal. It just loves viruses, I think. I don't know.
The pig. Is the Spanish flu related to Spanish fly? Is that some sort of conjugation relationship there?
As a linguist,
I can
tell you no.
I heard Spanish fly was like going to watch the submarine races. Yeah, not really. But the swine flu, Spanish flu, it's the same. H1N1, the subtypes are the same. However, this is this year's variant, the swine flu that we have, is a slightly different variant in that we've got human bits, it's got
avian bits, right? And it's got pig bits, and they've all mixed together. And there's even some stories that go that kind of have come up in the news that maybe in Canada we might have seen the flu go into the swine and be transmitted back into the swine from people and then back to people from the swine. So maybe there's even this back and forth. And that's one of the interesting points, is that usually when a virus jumps species, it doesn't go back again.
Wow.
So it's like once it mutates to being a human virus, one that infects us, it's not infectious to pigs anymore. But
it's not unlike the way we evolved, mammals evolved from sea creatures, and then some mammals went back to the ocean.
Right. I mean, there's no real rule saying that they can't go back.
It's just unusual.
It's just unusual.
And in Canada, would that be influenza A?
Oh my God. But for one day, if I can jump in for a second, I have this question. For one day, it was the newspaper.
That just killed me.
Hey, this is by the way, everybody, this is Diamond Dave Whitaker.
For one day, you know, but for one day, I read in the newspaper, and I think I heard on NPR too, so it must be true. But anyway, this Mexican farm worker came up to Canada. And this is when the height of the Mexican swine flu, they were calling it then, came up, and they claimed that within a day or two, he was working in a swine farm, in a pig farm in Canada, that 586 pigs all died within a day or two.
This is why we need stronger border controls, because obviously it's these Mexican pigs making it up to Canada.
That's what I'm talking about, political implications. Did either of you hear about that? Did you see that account? And then it disappeared.
Mm. I didn't hear anything about it, actually. I never saw it.
But I thought you might, because you mentioned Canada.
Yeah.
And this was at the height where it seemed like most of the flu, and they had all this fear and all this panic going around in Mexico and whether to close the border or not. And then immediately after, within a day or two, they had this story about this Mexican farm worker who came back from a vacation in Mexico where he worked on a pig farm in Canada, and 586 pigs all died within. Mm-hmm. And that's where I think the story came of going back and forth. But I never saw it again. And mm-hmm. So you wonder what's true and what isn't true.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's pretty much the subject of our discussion here. It's like, what's true and what isn't true?
Yeah, and there are all sorts of things that we hear in the media, and, you know, on the internet, anything can be true just about, you know, it's like whatever somebody writes, it's true. And all of a sudden you have stories about, you know, it's drug companies that have designed the virus to be able to infect people. And, you know, maybe this is something that Obama planned to help the media get off of his economic stimulus package. And
I just saw a video that a blog pointed to, that's an Iranian video that has this other conspiracy angle, which is saying that the United States is the only country that has stockpiles of a lot of things like smallpox, and no, not the vaccine,
the actual bacteria or and, viruses,
and that it's because of our experiments. And it also said it was indicting Gilead Sciences, which is the company that makes Tamiflu. It's a conspiracy so that they make a lot of money. They're a Jewish company, and Donald Rumsfeld is a stockholder and connected to the company. So, yeah, there's all sorts of conspiracy theories out there.
I wonder if, I mean, for all of these, there is some amount of truth. I mean, yes, we do stockpile viruses, we stockpile vaccines for research so that we can figure out vaccines, so we can figure out medications, so that we can figure out how to use them as bioweapons. You know, this is all part of it. And then at the same time, stuff goes wrong sometimes. And so when you hear about, you know, the conspiracy of, so a laboratory, or maybe developing something and then spreading it out into the population to see what will happen. This stems from real stories where just a year and a half ago, there was a leak from a level 4 biosafety lab where somebody working on the 1918 Spanish flu, it got out, and they sent it to somebody, and they sent it to a bunch of labs that weren't supposed to have it. Mm. You know, and stuff, accidents happen, and sometimes it's just that the security is maybe not properly in place, or, I mean, what is the security that we should have on this? I mean, when researchers are studying these things to try and help people, how much security do we put on them?
I like to base it on the Andromeda strain.
I'm gonna jump in before my window's closed here. I've got one more conspiracy theory. I'm the worst kind of subscriber's conspiracy theories because I think they're all just as likely as
Just a second. Hi, this is bitch. I'm just gonna cut in. This is Pirate Cat Radio. I'm DJ Prefect, and we're here with the science comedian Brian Mallow. It's right, Mallow, right?
It's Mallow.
Okay, I keep going Mallow. Mallow and Dr. Kirsten Sanford from This Week in Science, and our fearless intern Meg is a fluent Spanish speaker, and she has a really interesting perspective on the news reporting of H1N1 from Mexico versus news reporting here in the U.S.
Nice.
So when the whole thing first came out, I first saw little bits about the swine flu on like the trashiest 6 o'clock news here in the States. And it was, of course, completely concentrated on Mexico, that it was this Mexican flu and all these people are dying in Mexico and we have to do everything we can to keep it in Mexico, right?
Yeah.
So then I come in and I was interning for a show here at Pirate Cat Radio, Sounds of the Mission with Pedro, and I started looking at the newspapers in Mexico and the numbers were completely different. Completely opposite of the numbers that we're seeing in the news here. And so then I compare those numbers to the numbers on the World Health Organization, and they match the ones in the Mexican newspaper. So
did you check the CDC? Were the CDC numbers the same?
No, they were. I mean, the Mexican newspaper was referencing the World Health Organization. So then I just kind of went straight there. So basically, you know, like on one of the major newspapers in Mexico today, they report that the United States has 5,764 cases and Mexico has 5,764 and Mexico has 3,892. You know, it's just something that, like, I don't know if it's a full-on conspiracy theory, but it's definitely something that was badly reported.
Well, I think sometimes it's like sort of like the game of telephone. Stuff gets blown out of proportion because I think my girlfriend just told me she heard that in Germany they were reporting there were 100,000 cases in the United States.
Right.
Well, we just saw – I just read that number somewhere else. What it was saying was worldwide – there's been a certain number of thousand, but what they were saying is that the number of cases reported isn't the whole thing. That they're guessing that for each reported case, there might be 20 cases of people that are, and that's where they came up with a potential of 100,000.
Right.
Well, you pass that on through a couple people, and all of a sudden there are 100,000 confirmed cases in the United States.
Right. Right.
And then the difference from that also is, you know, that the reason they come up with that is also the difference in the health systems between different countries. And so the United States, people are a little bit more apt to jump the gun and go to the doctor and go, give me an antibiotic. I have the flu.
I think that
doesn't make any sense.
And that is where you
people
see,
do it.
That is where you see a lot of the numbers, too. When the newspapers report on how many cases of swine flu, it's how many people show up and say, hey, I have swine flu. And the reporters kind of jump on that.
Right.
And then there's also the problem of it takes several days to actually do a culture and to be able to determine what it is that a person coming and presenting symptoms actually has. So when somebody comes to the hospital and you've got a pandemic or, you know, an outbreak or whatever you're calling it, you jump to the first and easiest conclusion, which is that they are presenting symptoms for what everybody is sick of. But it could be that they have salmonella. Or it could be that, okay, what is it? You have a flu. So you have a fever. You have maybe some aches. Your stomach's hurting. Maybe, you know, these things go along with food poisoning. You know, with any other bacterial
pregnancy.
Yeah, I mean, these symptoms are very general to a large number of illnesses. And so, what people tend to do in the health industry is jump to the first logical conclusion and then test, but they start treating before they actually know what the actual diagnosis is. And so, that number gets reported as one sickness, but then, 4 or 5 days later, you don't really have the flu. And all of a sudden, don't go back and erase that. That's too much trouble.
No. I mean, you don't go back and... I mean, that's part of the problem with print itself and the attitude in print journalism, which is that, well, you know what? We made a mistake. And generally, they don't go back and correct the error or anything like that. They don't print.
Or if they do, it doesn't get any air.
Right. Exactly. That's not news.
Unlike bloggers who will make the correction.
Right. We don't
flip it around on them.
You know what? We don't take kindly to sarcasm here in San Francisco.
I thought that's what I was here for.
More sarcasm, please.
All right. We're going to take a quick little break. Oh, Diamond Dave, are you...
Before we do, let me ask a question.
Diamond Dave, what's up?
Now, they're talking about the development of the vaccine. Last I saw, they're talking about a six-month period. Mm-hmm. It would take 6 months to develop, not only develop it, but have it ready to be marketed, and we're talking about millions of doses. Mm-hmm. Now, so a lot of money is resting on this, a lot of investment in these very difficult times with the economy collapsing like a house of cards in very difficult times. Now, are these individual, is there one lead pharmaceutical company that's developed other vaccines in the past, and they're playing with these a little bit to get, and they need lots of chicken eggs to do this, isn't this right?
Yeah, they usually
billions
use chicken eggs.
Chicken eggs, it must be, to do this, right?
Yeah, a lot, which is one of the issues with the avian flu. When they came up with the vaccine for the avian flu, they were actually, you know, culturing this vaccine in chicken eggs to be able to, and so there was the question of whether or not it was actually going to affect, you know, like the fact that it was grown in chicken eggs, whether it was going to affect the potency of the vaccine at all. And so, yeah, it's always an interesting question when you're actually
okay to follow this up then. So they're busy developing this and then mass producing this. Will this be and so millions of dollars are involved, I'm sure. They got government contracts all over the world. It's now in 85 countries, they say. So we're talking about millions of perhaps hundreds of billions of dollars. I don't know, but is that shared by a number of pharmaceutical companies? This is done privately, I assume.
Private companies are definitely working on it. Usually, there's one company that goes, "I got it first," you know, and they basically get out there. But there are a number of companies who are currently working on it.
So it is possible to patent. To patent this fuel, so then they would then license it to other pharmaceutical companies and governments and so on.
Yeah.
So this is a complicated business plan and business structure, and which is kicked
very
off.
Complicated.
So every time a new flu arises, this has to be done again.
Every year.
And so there's a whole bureaucracy involved with doing this and getting it licensed, and the mind boggles, as they say.
Yeah.
But I'd be interested in hearing as much as you could tell us about that.
Do you want to go to a break? And we'll
yeah, we can come back to that.
I'll tell you about my new company when we come back.
how exciting. Right, we'll come to a break. I know that the Ustream people are having trouble hearing the guests, so we will try and get that fixed up. And so we'll take a break and come back in a couple minutes. Cool. Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. Thanks for tuning in.
I can hear us just fine.
Stopping history, the code in a look. What's that number? That number. That number.
We're back on Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. We're just taking a quick break and get the audio fixed on our video feed. It's kind of a new experiment that we're doing here at Pirate Cat Radio. Hey, you guys out there, Kirsten and Brian, are you guys ready to go again?
Oh, yeah, we're ready.
I'm ready. I drank my hot chocolate.
Ooh, hot chocolate.
Ooh.
How was it?
It was very good, and now I'm going to be up all night long because I can't deal with any kind of caffeine at all after like 3 p.m.
Wow! Did you guys know that we have a maple bacon latte?
Maple bacon.
Yeah.
And is that just in honor of swine flu?
No, yeah. We always have it. In fact, we had Anthony Bourdain come down to the cafe a few months ago and order the maple bacon latte, and apparently he ended up ordering three. You know. Gave us high marks on our maple bacon latte.
Wow. Well, I don't even know how.
You're still.
What would the standard of comparison be anyway?
I don't know, but he's
I've
Anthony
never heard
Bourdain.
Of such a thing, yeah.
All I've had so far, I tried chocolate covered bacon once, and I was not very excited.
Popular one in San Francisco.
Not popular in here.
We've also got, I think we've got a bacon Bloody Mary and a bacon ice cream here in San Francisco. Not here, I mean, not
now,
in the cafe, but
yeah.
Around San Francisco.
Now, my vegetarian and vegan friends, of which I am not one, neither, you know,
they still eat bacon, don't they?
You know, the pig has taken a lot of abuse at our hands, and in particular, the pig is supposed to be a very smart animal. Mm-hmm. And yeah, seems like a little karmic retribution here, doesn't it?
Swine flu.
Well, I'm about to go out the door, but I just went in with this.
I know.
I'm about to go out the door, but I just end with this.
Hey, Diamond Dave.
Maple bacon latte and swine flu. So it just reminds me to say everybody from everybody with the sound of my voice out there in Radio Land, Shabbat Shalom.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you, Diamond Dave. That was Diamond Dave Whittaker, everybody.
You say
He's
Shalom, and I say Shalom.
Shabbat Shalom.
An absolute San Francisco legend, beat poet, inspirer, and he is the
defiler
wrangler,
of women.
Defiler. Wait a second. See you later. Great. You know what? This may be the perfect opportunity to talk about a little bit more about the swine flu hysteria that erupted. And some countries were banning the sale of pork. Across state
Egypt,
lines.
In Egypt, they killed 250,000 pigs.
Oh, my
the,
God.
All of the pigs in one around one city, they just... Oh, dear. Sorry,
But those pigs had offended them.
Yeah. I think it was also an excuse in a Muslim country to get rid of the pigs. But there is quite a lot of that kind of a hysteria. It's like, the pigs, they're going to give us the flu.
Wait a second. For us dummy heads here at Pirate Cat, you know, we're very good at being rebellious, but not always so great at being scientific and erudite. Can you get swine flu by eating pork? Is it the same as mad cow?
No, the virus particles actually only exist within the respiratory tract. That's in the mucous membranes is where they replicate.
Right.
And in a live pig?
In a live pig. So if, you know, there's this great picture of a little kid licking a pig snout, you know, like little kid going, you know, giving the pig a big old smooch on its pig snotty nose, you know, maybe not such a good idea.
Meg, did you pull up an article about this?
I did pull up an article.
This is on Reuters from where?
Geneva.
Oh, yeah.
So I basically going through all these articles, I found Russia, China, several different countries have banned pork exports or imports.
Well, basically because the WHO... has alerted to swine flu, except they're also saying that there's no danger of swine flu from contact with pork.
The Philippines, Serbia, Kazakhstan.
Great.
Well, the question is, you know, has the virus completely, like, made the swap, the jump into humans? If the virus has jumped from the pigs into humans, we don't have to worry about the pigs so much with this particular virus
anymore. It's already too late anyway.
It's already in people. And when it's in people is when it's jumping
being transmitted.
It's being transmitted from person to person to person to person. It's not like high-fiving pigs is going
right.
to, you know, that's not what goes on.
Yeah. So, you know, now we have this thing, one of the aspects of the weird world that we live in is people wearing masks.
You've
seen surgical masks way more often.
I was just on a couple of flights. I was on Virgin American going to D.C., and there are people doing international flights, and they've got these surgical masks, and
what does that do? What does that help? Does that help anything?
If somebody comes up and spits in your face, it'll keep the spit from getting in your nose and mouth, maybe. But
interestingly, you know, when I see that, my question is always, I want to go up to them and say, are you wearing that
because you're sick?
You're sick and you don't want to infect someone else, or because you're afraid of getting infected by someone else?
Are you sick or am I sick?
In Japanese people, it's common in their culture, if they're sick...
Yeah.
They will wear a mask out of respect to other people. That's not a very American thing.
And that's great.
Yeah.
Because those surgical masks do prevent the spread of those vapor particles, the moisture droplets that come out of your nose and mouth when you sneeze or you cough, and it's all like, virus!
Mm-hmm.
You know, flying out
keeps
into space.
Keeps it all to yourself.
Yeah, let me keep that in here.
Yep.
Whenever I sneeze and somebody says, God bless you, I always want to say, I don't believe you have that authority.
Ooh. Nice.
We're getting into that.
Yes and no.
Yeah. So one of my favorite people on Twitter made this great quip. He says, if somebody sneezes at you and they have swine flu, you will freaking die because a pig sneeze is like 1,000 times more sneezeful than any other sneeze.
That's a true fact.
It's a true fact. You heard it here first on Pirate, Cat Radio.
I'm glad we're like spreading facts. Yes. Just like viruses.
Exactly. Viral facts.
Right.
You're infected.
You know, I got into this whole thing. I like spreading joy germs instead. You know, nice happy stories instead of stories of like death and terror.
Yeah.
It's like joy germs. Everyone be happy, okay?
Yeah.
Let's just forget about the end of the world, all right?
Well, you know, another aspect of that that's infected our culture for a while now is the in bathrooms, instead of, you know, levers and stuff, many of them have light sensors, so you don't have to touch it. Now, ladies, I don't even know if you have the perspective on this. I think I like to believe that women's restrooms are in general cleaner than men's. I don't know what I'm basing that on.
We would like to believe this as well.
But you know, the thing is, so I like that because frankly, I don't want to touch the lever at all. I'm fine with not touching it at all. I will leave it. But the only thing about these light sensors is some of them, the sensitivity is set so high that if you shift your body a millimeter, you're not done. And the cascade of water splashing you with every bit of infection that was in that urinal or toilet. And you're like, what? I'm not done. Can you give me this much leeway? I'm human. And then my girlfriend added that, which I didn't have this perspective, that if you're sitting on a toilet, women have an exposed mucous membrane. So you're even a little more you're a little more vulnerable to that than us.
And I don't know about how many girls out there, I like just don't sit.
Yeah.
You hover. And then with the light sensitive ones, they just flush randomly.
Yeah.
Because you move a little bit and all of a sudden you're like, spray.
But frankly, you know, the whole idea of, it's a good thing that we have that because I've always thought that there was a flaw in the hand washing procedure in general, because I'm sure some of you thought of this. You go to the bathroom, you have whatever you have on your hands. So what do? You grab the faucet knobs and transfer that stuff to the knobs. Then you wash your hands. And then you clean your hands off, wipe the slate clean, then you grab those knobs and turn them off, and you're freshly reinfected, and you go out into the world and shake hands.
And yeah, it's as if you never did anything.
Yeah. But I don't even know, do you know much about that? Like, what, let's say I go to the bathroom, what's the risk? What is on my hands that I should be washing off?
Yeah. Everything. Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, we're covered in bacteria. We have there are more bacteria on our body and in our body than cells that belong to the human species.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
The cells that make you are a minority compared to the bacteria.
Washing hands is going to fix that.
No washing hands is going to fix that. We even have, like, you know, our right hand and our left hand are infected or covered in different species of bacteria. Men have different species of bacteria than women have on our hands because of our pH differences in our skin. So there's all these constant differences. And then, you know, if you've been around people, if you've been touching a lot of stuff, the phone at your office or the keyboard, if you have a shared computer or anything like this, if you've been sick and you haven't cleaned everything off, you're just constantly reinfecting yourself, or not infecting, but re-engaging with those bacteria. Yeah. I mean, the bacteria are just happy to hang out on you. They're like, all right, this is good. And bacteria really usually are not a problem of any kind until there's an imbalance, until one species makes it to the top.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, frankly, you know, for me also, I think it's way more important for me to wash my hands before I go to the bathroom than after, because my hands have been out in public touching a lot of stuff. My private parts haven't been getting nearly as much action as my hands. So I want to wash my hands before I touch myself. Afterwards, it's really not, I don't think, you know, first of all, I'm not splattering urine all over my hands, usually. And even if I do, I mean, like, right then, that's really more your problem than mine. Afterwards, it's not really, I don't think there's, I'm not worried about touching that. But I think there's the issue about fecal matter, possibly. Is that
fecal matter is one of the big
deals. But again, more your problem than mine. Sorry.
Yeah. You should see me in the bathroom. I try not to. I mean, you won't, but I don't. Yeah. I really go through using my elbows.
Exactly.
Pretty much.
You become a soccer player.
Never use your hands.
Tap into your primate roots, you know. Like just.
All right, my dears, we need to cut to a public service announcement.
She's
like,
enough, like
this
enough,
hasn't been. You don't think this has been a public service announcement?
All I can say is we should all become Japanese and bow and not shake hands.
Yeah, but you
because
know,
shaking yes. hands is a really great way, you know. Sniff,
but
sniff,
I, you know what?
Spread,
in November
spread.
In Japan, I also saw like 1 in 5 people walking around with a face mask on, and it was like end of the world looking all the time. It was weird.
Yeah, but at Burning Man, everybody wears face.
This
masks.
Is true. So. But then again, that is I go to Burning Man, and I don't know about you Kiki, but I go to Burning Man to feel that end of the world thing for 1 week, not like my entire life.
Right.
Yeah.
Mad anyway. Max 1 week only.
Right.
Yeah.
Except for those of us who wear the Mad Max leather jacket all year round. I'm DJ Prefect, and we're with Dr. Kirsten Sanford of This Week in Science and Brian Mallow, the science comedian, and we're going to cut to some music, come back with a PSA, and resume this discussion on swine flu, Bacon's Revenge. Water froze in the generation. And we're back on Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. And we're here. You're not on, Dr. Kiki.
Am I?
You are now.
Okay, but now I have nothing to say.
Yeah, we've changed
Now you have
topics.
Nothing to say. So we are live with the science comedian Brian Mallow and Dr. Kirsten Sanford of This Week in Science. We're talking about swine flu here at Pirate Cat Radio Cafe.
We're talking about Star Trek.
We're this is true, actually. We're not talking about Bacon's Revenge anymore or the apocalypse. We're talking about Star Trek.
The plausibility of the black hole production.
Yeah, and?
Plausible or not.
We're talking, it's all spoiler radio. We're pirates. We don't care if you haven't seen it.
Arr. This is true. We've hijacked your brain waves, and we don't care whether you enjoy your next movie. So the next bunch of topics that we can move into is, I'm kind of curious about the prevention of people being hospitalized or brought into ambulances because of suspicion that they had swine flu. This happened a couple times, didn't it?
Yeah, I've heard stories about it. That there have been isolated incidences of people being denied access to ambulance transportation or buses. You know, people like a bus driver not letting people on the bus to not allow not take them to the hospital.
You let them on a bus, you start with one person with swine flu, and you end up with a busload
of them. Full of them, I know. But I think they're isolated incidences, and I don't think it's anything that's been very widespread, but I think it's part of, it's an unfortunate side effect of the hysteria that's been brought by the media.
Right.
So you think it's a conspiracy of ambulance drivers?
I hadn't thought about that.
I'm looking at a news story right now. In Toluca, a city west of the capital, one family said health authorities refused to treat a relative Sunday who had full-blown flu symptoms and could barely stand. The man, 31-year-old truck driver Elias Carmacho, was even ordered out of a government ambulance. His father-in-law, that's what his father-in-law told the Associated Press, Toluca, west of the capital in Mexico. Paramedics complained that Carmacho, who had a fever, was coughing and had body aches. Basically, they complained that he was sick and they wouldn't let him on an ambulance. Yeah.
You're sick. Not
there are a lot of
you to the hospital.
People in hospitals. You don't want to get them sick.
Yeah. Well, I mean, isn't that where a lot of people get infected in third world countries anyway, though?
That happens here. This people
happens
get
here.
Sick at hospitals.
What's, yeah. I mean, in terms of new flu things, flu pandemics and things like that. Does that happen a lot? Like people get brought into hospitals and they end up getting wind up sicker?
Not necessarily. Sometimes yes, sometimes no. It depends. They can be infected with secondary infections. So if they have the flu, often that will develop into pneumonia-like symptoms, and that can end up leading to bacterial infections that make them more sick, because there are very really super strong bacteria in hospitals and lots of viruses hanging around.
Mm-hmm. Why does that happen in hospitals? Is it the septic environment, the antiseptic environment, where they're just trying to whack any tiny little microbe they can?
Yeah, so it's a combination of the cleaning, the sterility, the sterilization practices that the hospitals have to clean them constantly and keep them really clean, and people constantly bringing new bugs in. And so you have these bugs that are mutating, and every time there's something that they're supposed to clean them, and every once in a while you're going to be like, aha, I'm a bug that made it. And that bug's going to be like, you know, chasing a nurse next thing you know.
Isn't that one of the problems with antibiotics, is that we do have all this bacteria that is essential and not dangerous to us, and you take antibiotics, and when you get rid of too many of them, it makes it possible for the bad ones to flourish when they wouldn't have, because it's an ecosystem that's dominated by all this stuff that's natural to us. But when you start wiping them out, it's an opportunity for the others to jump in.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So there are a lot of things about antibiotics that aren't necessarily so great, and we've been using them way too much in the United States, and like all the hand soaps and various things that are like antibacterial hand soap, where they've got triclosan and like all this other stuff. It's like, well, you know, all you're maybe doing by using that is helping the bacteria to become stronger and resistant to the triclosan. And in terms of, you know, hand washing, you don't really need that stuff in your soap anyway. Soap does a good job on its own of just, you know, bubbling up and lifting the bacteria off of your skin, or the viruses.
And
whatever.
You were saying something about the length of time that you wash your hands?
Oh, yeah. The length of time makes a difference, because it's not killing bacteria that you're dealing with. You're actually trying to get them physically off of your skin. And so the longer you wash your hands with soap and water, the more you're going to lift them off.
So the idea is that 30 wipe seconds them off me. Send them off to someone else.
Yeah, so if all you do is just kind of put your hands under the water for a second, you're really not doing anything at all. So you should 30 seconds, the alphabet a couple of times, whatever. Sing happy birthday to yourself a few times, whatever happens to work.
I've always heard, is this true that if you, let's say you exclusively drink bottled water, that there's something about our immune system that it's good to be exposed to all sorts of bacteria. That, for instance, if you drink a lot of tap water all the time, and then, you know, there's the stereotype of going to Mexico, drinking the water and getting sick, but that you're less likely to, that your immune system can handle it better if you normally drink tap water and play in dirt a lot. And
yeah, if like me, you grew up out in the country and you swim in the ditch, you know, you eat the dirt, whatever it happens to be, you know, make mud pies and then forget that they're made of mud. You know, you're probably, you know, there is a lot of research that shows that kids who grow up around cattle actually have stronger immune systems.
Weren't there also studies about like rich kids versus poor kids, essentially? Like rich kids who kept their kids like excruciatingly clean
have more problems with allergies and asthma and immune system disorders than children who are not kept as clean.
But they also
clean.
Can afford better health care.
But they can afford the better health care, so there you go. It's just an interesting point to bring up that if you are, you know, clean, there's another idea that like there are a lot of gut diseases, like chronic gastrointestinal problems, where they've treated them with pinworms. They've been starting to give, they use actually a strain of pinworms and give it to people.
Wow.
And then the pinworm actually lives there for a little while and then ends up passing through. But while it's there, it ramps up the natural immune system, and that actually gets rid of a lot of chronic gut problems for some people.
I've actually heard that from, there's a certain, I don't know if you guys have ever heard about this, instinctive nutrition or paleolithic nutrition people, fanatics basically. And they will, a lot of times, not give a damn about the parasitic infections that they're getting from the raw meats that they're eating and things like that, and see any particular infection as a basically a cleansing. Like, oh, I needed to get that infection. I needed to get that outgrowth of pinworms or whatever to clear out all this other junk that was going on. But, you know, this week in crackpots.
Yeah.
Do we have a question from the audience?
Yeah, there's a question. I think there's a mic.
Or a comment or a swear word.
Maybe he just wants
we
to
can,
order
we
a drink.
We can swear. This is pirate radio.
Idiots.
That's fair enough.
And pirates swore because, like sailors.
Yeah.
Right, is this thing on? I don't hear a thing.
All right, yeah, you're good.
That?
There you go.
I actually heard that there was a correspondence, and this was something I heard on Ask a Scientist that was extremely interesting, which was that there's definitely a correspondence between the incidence of Crohn's disease, which is an intestinal disorder, and the elimination of gut worms. And they thought that the two might be related and that human beings might actually need parasites to be healthy.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's probably one of the things that I've read as well. Yeah,
that's very interesting.
I think it's fascinating. The fact it goes back to this idea that maybe we are too clean. Maybe everything that we are ingesting, we're washing everything. But at the same time, you know, we have a lower incidence now of diarrheal. Of diarrhea in the population. Diarrhea is a severe problem that actually leads to a lot of death in third world countries from due to dehydration. So there are a lot of good things about having our food clean and not dealing with these parasites or bacteria or, you know, the bugs that you get from not washing or washing with contaminated water.
But here's the thing. Here's what interests me a little bit is that evolutionarily, humanity kind of came up in a dirty environment, kind of integrated with the stuff around us and the little microbes and parasites and all that sort of thing. And it's probably area dependent. So like in the savanna, it might be useful to live symbiotically with a couple of certain worms to be able to digest a couple extra tubers or something like that. I'm making stuff up as I go along. Yeah. Science.
I think. Also, the big problem is the incidence of humanity also leads to an incidence of dirtier environments.
Oh, you know what? Justin Jackson is texting me, and he's saying it's hookworms, not pinworms.
He's saying what?
He's saying it was hookworms, not pinworms.
Hookworms, thanks, Justin.
Yeah, you know, I always thought that.
I think there have been a couple of studies though. I specifically remember a pinworm study.
Uh-huh. There's probably been an all kinds of worm study. In fact, one of the speakers who will be on a future apocalypse lecture, an epidemiologist whose name escapes me at the moment, from UC Berkeley, she is all about worms and parasites and that sort of thing. So we'll look into that for sure.
Yeah. That kind of stuff is just interesting. I mean, it's this world that we share with all of these different organisms, and you know, we think, you know, weeds are bad, parasites are bad, you know, it's basically all these things that just cause us a little discomfort or whatever,
right? Like swine flu.
Like the swine flu.
Just a little discomfort. So I want to give
a big shout out to Justin, though, my co-host on This Week in Science.
This Week in Science, I'm a
rock star.
Yeah, he's a rock star, and I'm a super fan of This Week in Science, and I'm a super fan of Science Comedian here, and I love the idea that you guys are getting science into culture, kind of getting it suffused into people's brains. I see it as, I love to say, inoculation against stupid.
I like that.
So, and that's kind of what we're trying to do here, because I see a lot of the mass media hysteria as erupting from people's misinterpretation of facts and not being able to understand the veracity of sources that they're getting stuff from. Like the CDC was actually good about the swine flu; they put out some good information, but. It's like they were the eye of a storm of just random, like, oh, a bunch of people just checked into the hospital and said they had swine flu. Oh, 50 cases just in San Francisco. And then the next day is like, actually, it was only two. And actually, it was only one the next day. So, yeah.
You know, of course, we don't want anyone to die, but there is something about, like, how much this has dominated the media. And there have been, I think, 86 deaths in the United States. So, I mean, look, you know, how many people die from car accidents, smoking, how many people died in the World Trade Center, like all of these, like 86 people, and we're talking about massive, constant media fear-mongering and media coverage and all this money. But I think there's genuinely, like, we don't know with something like this, there is a genuine risk of a pandemic.
Yeah, there absolutely is. And there's no way for us to know whether or not this particular flu was going to be the one that was going to have the mutation that would make it easily transmittable between people and dangerous and deadly.
Is this a DNA mutation that we can just kind of see? Like, we know that it's going to jump because it has this specific genetic code, or is it, could it be a number?
They're working on it. Yeah. They're, I mean, they've really got it down. They are really looking at the genetic code of these viruses, the flu virus, and they know a lot more than they used to.
A decade ago, even less than a decade ago, this would not have been possible. The idea that you could sequence a genome like that, this is brand new technology.
Yeah, and the speed with which they were able to identify this particular strain and be able to identify where it came from, and then also and sequence it, like you said, and then be able to send that sequence out to different labs and hospitals around the world so that those places could then compare what they were seeing with what we found, you know, with what was found to be the actual sequence. You know, the technology is amazing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still not enough to stop it, but...
right. But essentially, we're going to be able to look at the programming of viruses and say, this is going to be really virulent, and this one is just going to be like a regular flu, and this one we might as well just kind of, you know, you could put it in a... put it in the postal, you know, in postal service, and it'd be fine.
Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool. You know what? We have this PSA that we're supposed to read. We have these rules.
Oh yes, radio rules.
Yeah, even though Dr. Sanford
rules
has been
and pirates.
There's a code. There's a pirate code. All right.
You always wear the eye patch on the left eye.
Yar.
And read the PSA at 10
the
after.
Parrot's always on your right shoulder.
Even though Dr. Sanford has been basically issuing out PSAs the entire time, like, wash your damn hands, people. Jesus. So, all right. So we have Ross to give us a PSA.
This May, Mental Health America is launching the Live Your Life Well campaign, designed to help people.
And we're back on Pirate Cat Radio, 87.9 FM. We joined the conversation already in progress, and I have no idea. I have no idea where it's going and where it's taking us.
J.J. Abrams caused swine flu.
Oh!
New conspiracy, spread it.
Solved.
Yeah, it's a new... But we're not...
And tweeted that.
And
tweet that out.
Like the second season is going to go downhill, and then it might come back in the third season.
It's not swine flu. It's Vulcan flu.
So live long and prosper is ironic.
See? The Muppets are involved.
Damn it, Kermit.
Right. So this is... At Pirate Cat Radio at Cafe here in the Mission at 21st and 21st in Florida, I should say. We serve a mighty fine maple bacon latte, and you can join us here for our first Science Cafe event with Dr. Kirsten Sanford of This Week in Science and Brian Mallow, the science comedian. And we're talking about .com. ScienceComedian.com. Yeah, you guys. So I'm a huge fan of ScienceComedian.com and KirstenSanford.com. but is there anything more you want to say, Brian?
No, I'm done.
No, you're just going to add .com to everything
no,
from now
you
on.
Had a topic, and Kishore, you guys had a topic you wanted to segue
this
into.
This is true.
Right?
Hysteria.
Hysteria.
Bring the question, Kish.
Kishore, so my question is about
Kishore,
hysteria.
Hang on, just a second. Kishore, who hosts the Down to a Science Cafe here in San Francisco.
A real science cafe, not a pirate science cafe.
Uh-huh.
Oh, that quieted the crowd quickly.
Ooh, zing.
Wow, such as it is.
My question is about hysteria, and there is a lot of information out and about the flu, and... there's everyone from Joe Biden talking about don't ride the subway to some sort of moderate person from the CDC who was very uninteresting and didn't make a good soundbite. So my question
but they
is...
But they were getting it right, but they weren't very consumable. You know what I mean?
They just didn't have good stage presence.
Right,
yep.
So my question is there's legitimate concern that there's going to be some massive flu that comes along that is devastating, but where the hell should I turn for legitimate information? Because there was like a 48-hour period where I was like, should I get a mask? Should I go down to the mission and get a stylish mask? Like there was lots of questions out there of what I should do, and more importantly, who I should trust in this period. And I'd like to hear about the issue of trust and where you personally go when it comes to these issues.
Well, you're right to start with a comedian.
I always trust the comedians first. Where do I go first? Jon Stewart.
That's true.
That is a good point, because so many people are just getting their news from The Daily Show, aren't they?
I know. I go for issues of health. I go to the CDC and the World Health Organization first, and those are the very first places that I go for information. Well, first I find out about it on Twitter, and then and then I go look for the facts on the actual websites where the research, where the work is being done. Unfortunately, places like the CDC and the World Health Organization, the information that they put on their website is also limited by the speed at which they can work and the speed at which that information can get reliably out and then posted to the website. It's because you're dealing with people in Mexico who are talking to people in Georgia who are talking to people, in D.C. And like this information is going from one person to another, and eventually you get it up on the website. And it's supposed to be trustworthy,
right?
But at the same time, it was an interesting kind of story between what was going on in Mexico this time around, and I was actually listening to a couple of blogs. There's a great virology podcast actually called This Week in Virology, and there's a This Week in Everything these days, and they were talking right before the swine flu thing came out. They were actually talking about this strange kind of flu-like thing that they were thinking, oh, maybe it's coming from swine, and they were talking about it someplace. People staring at us through the window here. They were talking about it, and then the news came out that there was something in Mexico, and then the CDC finally got on top. So it was like the CDC were talking about something else, and then something happened in Mexico, and then the CDC finally put the two together, and by that time, it was already 2 weeks in. And so it took 2 weeks before the CDC even recognized that there was any kind of an issue, and by the time that it was the 2 weeks that they had recognized it, the thing had already been going for like a month or more in Mexico. So, it took a long time before everything built up.
I want to cut in here for 1 second, because we have Justin Jackson on the phone. He just called in.
Oh, ooh. Justin.
Yeah. Justin, can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear Justin out there in the cafe?
Good recommendation for getting yourself a good source about any sort of pandemic-y stuff that comes up in the future. Make a friend at your public health lab. Like, bring cookies by, a bottle of wine, something. Because the information you'll get from having a friend who's actually involved in working on this stuff is completely different than anything that will be in the media.
Yeah, this is true.
The CDC, they have a job to do. They have to have this big reaction. They have to do the investigation. And it will look like they've discovered the pandemic flu that's going to kill everybody before they've identified it just by their reaction to it. So if you've got somebody who's actually looking at the data and looking at the strains and hearing what's being talked about in the public health labs, the reaction was not very big. They weren't that concerned about it, really.
No.
I think also there's sort of a tribal aspect to the acquisition of information by human brains. It's like you trust who's close to you, and you don't quite trust the authority. You might sort of trust it just based logically, but you don't trust it emotionally. And we do know very recently some bunch of studies have come out about rational thought being influenced by our emotions, so our judgments about what the truth and our usefulness of information is moderated by who we're closest to.
All right, we're most of us are more frightened by the thought of a plane crash than a car crash.
Mm-hmm.
And statistically,
right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
It's because it's much more dramatic and,
Yeah, and if there were actually a pandemic... What?
What was that?
And if there were actually a...
Some random person just
now going
for
outside.
The folks at home who probably wouldn't have heard that get picked up. We some random person just rocked by and screamed, which will happen on Friday night in the Mission at Pirate Cat Radio.
Yeah.
What was I going to say? I've been distracted. Okay, so if it were actually a pandemic situation where it's actually something that's spreading, it's something that's really dangerous, it's something that's spreading quickly, we wouldn't have seen such a lax reaction. We would have seen much, much quicker mobilization of, you know, this country's Tamiflu stores. We would have seen a really quick mobilization of the troops here at home. We would have, if there were issues where like townships had infections, we would have seen towns closed down. We would have seen our rights taken away. Mm. I mean, that's what, if there is a situation where we have something that is going to spread quickly and really deadly, they're going to lock it down and they're going to close. They're going to use the military. They're going to close things down. You're not going to be able to get out. Like San Francisco's bridges will be shut down. You will not be able to leave the city. I mean, that's what's going to happen, and then you'll know it's a big deal.
There was a certain amount of closure. A bunch of schools closed, and I think I can't remember the number of schools in the United States, but I think I remember that it was like 42,000 students. And I am actually, I can't believe I'm waiting this long into the show to say, I am a victim of swine flu. You don't have to back off yet. I'm the kind that I'm not sick. I actually was supposed to perform just a couple weeks ago for the Fort Worth, Texas Independent School District science, math and science teachers. And about a week or so before the gig, they decided they had to cancel school for the week and all gatherings. This was only going to be teachers, but all gatherings. So I lost a gig. But I'm a victim of swine flu. I'm getting paid anyway, so I'm that kind of victim. It's not that bad.
Still all right. You're not on a vendetta against the pigs.
Yeah. And then I guess I just heard on Friday, that would have been today. Yeah. Unless it was last Friday, like $1 billion was just put towards developing a vaccine. So it's not like we're taking it lightly.
No, they're definitely going to be developing a vaccine because this is something that's going to be circulating and something could mutate. I mean, if it does go back and gain, like maybe if it mixes somehow with an H1N5 avian flu.
Yeah, so actually what's the difference? I mean, what's the H5N1 was much more virulent, much more scary, much more, you know, was going to kill more people? Is that what's going on?
Well, it was more deadly.
It was more deadly.
But it didn't spread from person to person as easily.
Right.
And it all has to do with the like the proteins on the surface of the virus. It has its little capsid, its virus coat, and it's got the hemagglutinin and the neuraminidase. You know, those are the big jargony words, but the H and the N proteins.
Because here's where this conversation is all leading. Like, what is going to kill us? What's going to wipe us out?
Death is going to kill you.
Death is going to kill. Life will kill you, basically.
Life will kill you.
Yeah. As soon as you're born, you're doomed.
I have a question for Brian.
Oh, hang on a second. Yeah. Yes, John Paul?
Channel 4 is open now. Brian, when you say your gig was canceled here in Fort Worth, because we're potentially going to have a gig in Fort Worth ISD schools, and they decided to shut down the schools, is that because that Fort Worth was one of the locations where there was a case or a rumor of the case for a swine flu?
You know what? I'm not really sure.
So you didn't actually look into it.
I just think that I'm not sure if they had actual cases there, but it was in response to this. They decided they canceled school throughout the district and any large, because like I said, I wasn't performing to students. I was performing to teachers, but large gatherings. And they just decided that it just fell into the, and you know, the thing is they extended it through like May 8th or something. And my show was supposed to be the 7th.
I think one of the funny things also is like, you know, it's closing the schools is usually the first thing that's going to happen because kids are dirty.
They are. Right. I don't know why we have them.
Kids are little parasitic disease vectors. No.
They are.
Not to mention mental patients.
Right?
You know, there's something that's always amazed me. I used to think about insects, like for an insect to land on you, especially like a... I always thought it was like the ultimate David and Goliath, especially a mosquito to land on something that much bigger than you with the intention of eating it. Like, you're out of your mind. But then really, it's a virus or a bacteria. Talk about David and Goliath. We outweigh them by trillions, and yet they can take you down. I mean, it's unbelievable. It's like Luke Skywalker taking out the Death Star in a little X-wing fighter.
Mm-hmm. Right. They send a pulse charge right into your core. And,
I mean, it's unbelievable that something like that. You would think that something like that, like, because we've eliminated so many predators out of our lives. We've cleared most of the predators out of our lives. But these are some of the things that, like, that's just unbelievable that's outsmarted, outmaneuvers us, keeps evolving.
Right. Well, it evolves a lot faster than us.
Long after we're gone, the bacteria will still be here.
This is true.
They
along
keep
with the
evolving,
cockroaches.
Sorry, creationists.
No, this is proof of intelligent design because let's cut to a question. Felix, what do you got for us?
Yeah, is it maybe if we're lucky we can actually transform into bacteria and shrink ourselves down? We have much more to explore then.
I will be the biggest bacteria ever.
I will touch you.
My question was, how does the naming convention for viruses work? Because there's H5N1 and then there's H1N1, which is the... But, I mean, it's all H's and N's. What on earth does that mean?
And there's R2-D2... It's crazy.
It's all based on the different proteins, and I actually this is not my area of study, so I can't give you the exact breakdown, but it's based on there are a certain number of proteins on the surface of each flu virus, and it's the different combination, and you know, I don't know for sure.
You know what, people? We have about 10 minutes left in our show here.
I found it once on Wikipedia, though.
So you know it's true.
It's on Wikipedia. Look it up. RTFM, people. What did you write down?
I had something written down about the H1s and 5s.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of stuff.
It's knowable on the interwebs.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I feel like we really need to cover something about what are the diseases that we actually should be worried about? Like, mad cow disease is a lot scarier because you can eat cow and it goes in your brain and lives there.
Yeah, prions. They've taken a long... It's been a lot of study actually trying to determine whether or not it is the prion that's related to mad cow, and if it's the same thing that's scrapie, and that's a Creutzfeldt-Jacobs disease as well. And I think as far as people are talking, they think it's all the same thing. It's these little proteins that kind of get gummed up in the brain. And
are you a vegetarian?
I am a vegetarian.
Oh, you are? But you said something about loving bacon. But
I'm the weirdest vegetarian you'll ever meet.
You're a vegetarian who does eat bacon, or you're just bacon is?
Bacon
not stop,
we'll get into that discussion. My diet is, up for discussion.
Not
at some
exactly
point.
Germane.
So mad cow disease, not necessarily the worst thing. I mean, maybe we should consider more natural ways of feeding the animals that we eat as opposed to whether or not we're just eating them. I mean, what's going on? The problem is that we're feeding animals to animals. And so cows, which are evolved to eat grasses, we're feeding them these food pellets that are actually made up of sheep and other cows, and
fatten them up really
quickly. In an attempt because it's full of protein, and that protein will make them grow faster. And so I mean, that's a human thing, something we've developed because we want bigger cows to feed more people and make more money. And so if we could get rid of that kind of stuff, you know, a lot of the factory farming and the way that they, you know, feed the animals is a big part of the problem. It's not the eating meat itself that is the problem. It's how we treat the animals.
Right. So,
But I think, you know, in terms of things that we, you know, really need to worry about, you know, stuff like malaria is one of the biggest killers in the entire world.
Absolutely. And, I mean, it's actually kind of shameful that that malaria has plagued us for so long. And there was a great TED Talk by Bill Gates. Did you guys see this one?
Didn't see it.
Oh, where he released
the mosquitoes?
Yes, he released mosquitoes. He's like, fly, my pretties, you know. Infect them with malaria and then see how they like it. Yeah, I mean, the most of the world is still suffering horribly from malaria, and it's an awful disease. If it doesn't kill you, it actually lives in your system, and like you have malaria like regressions, like flashbacks, basically like LSD living in your spine. It's like malaria living in your system, and I forget what the symptoms are. Do you guys know?
Polio as well.
It's just awful. Like every once in a while, you just sort of break down. You can't really use your nervous system all that well. Wait a second, you're not on.
Sorry.
Now you are.
Malaria, you get chills, you get fever, you start sweating. People used to get it a lot. Like a lot of the human genome over the last million years or so actually has various hacks to try and get around malaria.
Yes, this is fascinating to me. I mean, have you guys ever heard of favism?
No.
There's this weird genetic trickery going on between the fava bean and some certain Greek males and malaria, where the trade-off between an increased resistance to malaria is that every season when the fava beans come in season, men, because of the pollen in the air, and it only affects men because of the XY chromosome kind of dealy thing, men have like a almost like a hot flash kind of thing, go a little bit crazy until they eat fava beans.
This is some kind of like comedy skit, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it sounds like fava Spock beans. In a Buck Time. And it's like he goes nuts until he gets right. the fava beans. It happens every 7 years, right?
Must
right?
Have
it's kind of like
fava beans.
It's kind of like Scooby Snacks or like, yeah, right. But no, it's absolutely true. It's just this weird like genetic loophole that that a certain population of Grecians have where it, the increased resistance to malaria virus.
And propensity for eating
propensity for propensity for being affected by pollen that is compensated for by eating fava beans.
That's completely random. I think another soapbox that I want to get on. Doesn't matter what we're going to die from, but keep vaccinating your children.
Right.
Vaccinations are good.
Yeah, none of this
don't
talk
listen
about
to former playmates for your medical advice.
Yeah, noted scientist and physician.
Comedians, yes. Playmates, no.
What about dengue? Is that something to worry about?
That's dengue.
I lived in South America for 4 years, and all of a sudden they have dengue when they never did before. It started in Brazil, and now it's moved into Argentina.
You don't think so?
And the only advice they're giving to the whole population specific.
Is... Wait. What was going on there?
Dengue fever is too environmentally specific. It doesn't really transmit very well. Same with Ebola. I mean, the thing about malaria is that, again, you really have to have mosquitoes. You have to have a vector around to make sure that it gets transmitted, because malaria doesn't transmit very well person to person.
So we're talking about, we're trying to get to what's the disease that's going to kill us all and take down humanity, right?
All right.
So those aren't it.
Okay. No.
Is that what we're saying?
My best guess is it's going to be a genetically engineered smallpox virus.
You're getting into genetically engineered
right.
Yeah, because natural plagues just don't kill enough people. They get too much natural immunity to it, and they're not really wired to get around. Like, they want to live. They want to actually breed and not cause death and havoc, et cetera.
Right. But then, which is like Ebola. Ebola kills its host quickly.
Which is why
it doesn't end up spreading. Yeah.
It might have to learn something.
You is something that's actually going to have a slow burn. It's going to spread everywhere. And then about a year, 2 years in, then it pops up everywhere.
Well, that's what's so brilliant about HIV, right?
Yep. The problem is that HIV doesn't really kill you fast enough.
Right.
That's, the
no, you could still survive to breed, and so, yeah.
Right, but that's the thing about the long... I mean,
it
really,
in terms of,
but the long incubation period enables it to be spread before you even know you have it.
Exactly.
Yeah. But, you know, that's interesting. You know, one of the fears we have is this loss of biodiversity, and that's a real big threat and an issue that everyone's concerned about. But I don't ever hear anyone talk about the positive side of loss of biodiversity and mass extinction, and that is fewer vectors for disease.
As climate changes, maybe there will be less environments that are conducive to mosquitoes. I know.
Oh, yeah, global
especially
warming.
Even the slight
increase in the temperature, I've seen that. They already talk about the slight increase in...
Yeah, we're going to see the Arctic thaw, and that's going to turn to more swampy land.
Plus, they're probably frozen in the Arctic ice are probably alien microbes.
That was actually a recent that was actually a recent story. I just saw that in Wired News, or I can't remember. I think it was Wired News, where the next source of the most virulent spreads of viruses could be frozen in Arctic ice. basically.
Or in
which,
the Antarctic.
For some reason,
that rained down from space
for some reason
ago,
doesn't scare me all that much.
It's the thing.
But that's what the endogenous retroviruses in our DNA are there for. I bet they're there to save us from those ancient ancient bacteria and viruses that are going to come back during the Great
Thaw. I hope so. That was inserted by the creators.
I know it. Yeah.
Wait. John Paul, what are you saying?
That's what saved us in a War of the Worlds, isn't it? Because eventually, there was a disease like in Earth ecosystem down the line that the aliens just clashed with. Yeah. It made them croak.
Right. They didn't have immunity to an Earth.
Right. It was
bug.
It was the common cold, says a fellow DJ here at Pirate Cat. We are totally erudite here. At least when it comes to pop culture.
Yeah. What? So all we can hope for is, you know, to make it through the flu so long enough so it'll kill off the aliens when they come to visit us.
Right. Right.
Is that what the take home message is?
Touch on every science fiction movie you can.
Yes. You got to get your facts from somewhere.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if it's not a science comedian, it's got to be some sci-fi. Yeah, can we get a zombie virus?
The reanimation of dead tissue. Well,
please.
There in the insect world, there's evidence of parasites and bacteria that actually kill their hosts, and the hosts keep walking around dead and do the bidding of the parasitic infection.
Was this something about ants this past week or something?
Yeah.
I didn't read the story.
It eats the brain out of the ants and then like just takes over the body and keeps going. Yeah, so
yes. In
the insect world, this happens all the time. So, you know, it's one step, right?
Insect zombies
to us.
Right.
See, yeah, actually, so far off.
total tangent here, but combine that with carbon nanotubes, where you can radio control basically things at the cellular level, and you got yourself a potent robot zombie army.
I like it.
Robot zombie.
Robot zombie insects.
The Borg, Star Trek Next Generation.
The Borg?
Robot zombies.
I think we should make robot zombie Barbie.
I thought Barbie was a robot zombie.
Exactly. I know, it just seems right.
All right, I want to warn you all that we're just about out of time. We've got about 4 minutes left in the show, so I want to give a huge thank you to Dr. Kirsten Sanford of This Week in Science and Brian Mello of Science Comedian, sciencecomedian.com, and we've got twist.org. You guys got to go check it out.
Thanks.
A website. PirateCatRadio. PirateCatRadio. Great. You guys, we are on 87.9 FM in San Francisco and
but what
in
about
LA.
In Berlin?
In Berlin, we're at 104.8. Thank you. Glad you asked.
Well, I just think, what is it? San Francisco,
Los Angeles,
and of course, Berlin.
And of course, right. Of course.
The three markets you would want to be in.
But honestly, just tune in on the web, you know, none of this over-the-air stuff. I mean, it's kind of cool on the local level, but when it comes down to it, PirateCatRadio.com, you can tune into some live streams. Today, we did a Ustream thing, which I'm very proud about. We had some audio issues at the beginning, but we do have quite a few Ustream viewers at this point, so yay.
Hey, everyone cool. out there.
PirateCat TV.
Thanks for watching.
Right.
And this will be available as a podcast later, too, right?
It's true. Yes, it will. We've got a podcast coming out. We've got this video thing going on.
So many choices.
Too many.
Soon, 3D
brain explode. And this has been our first periodic apocalypse, occasional lectures on the end of the world.
This was a lecture?
Yeah. That's just sort of the bombastic title that we sort of gave to it, you know.
I like
periodic
it.
Apocalypse. Periodic you need those.
You do. Apocalypse really means revealing. That's kind of what the root boils down to. So we've revealed. Do you feel like we've revealed some things?
A lot.
I think we did. Yeah,
mostly about zombies.
One would hope.
That was the final reveal.
That was just the final reveal. Yeah. It's the most recent
sounding
in your memory.
X-Files,
so
all
feels
of a sudden.
The strongest.
It's lost. What will be revealed?
Oh, now you're getting back to Lost again.
Oh, yeah. And on
he
that
tries
note,
to tie it in wherever.
Now that we've lost the whole topic of the show, let's
J.J. Abrams is responsible for the swine flu.
Mm.
Spread it. Tweet it. Blog it.
You know it. All right. Thanks, everybody, for coming. We had a great time. And this is Pirate Cat Radio, and I'm DJ Prefect. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We're going to cut over to Sonic Deisens. We don't have DJ Yuri G, but we do have his... Ooh, we do have a fearless cohort. And I would give a special thanks over to Meg, our great, awesome intern who sourced a whole lot of articles for me. Big applause from the audience for that. Cool. Thank you so much, everybody. And